The gravitational lens, you know, so you see multiple images of the star, but it's the different parts of the star, isn't it? It's like smeared all the way around it, so you're actually looking at like fractional parts.
So you have to think of it, if you look through a magnifying glass, you know, if you look at the newspaper, you know, you've got a nice perfect optic. Mm-hmm. If you look through the bottom of a Coke bottle, it's not quite so perfect, right? And you know, it sort of breaks up the image and it's distorted. So that's kind of what it's like. Each of these superclusters have galaxies in different places. And it's all about where the mass of galaxies in that supercluster actually is.
Have you got any kind of software to recombine it back into the original image?
Well, I don't, but you know, my colleagues spend a lot of time modeling the mass of these superclusters. So, you know, there's a relationship between light and mass for the mass of galaxies. So they basically start by mapping all the galaxies at the in the foreground, then they calculate the mass based on the, you know, luminosity. And then they build up the mass map of the supercluster. And then they have you know, relativistic models that let them calculate where things will reappear. So once they have one object, they can figure out it's going to show up anywhere else.
How does the distance behind the gravitational lenser influence the image?
I'm sure it does. I'm not sure I can really answer that. I think it's different for objects at different distances, but a lot of it is more dependent on what the mass distribution is like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the whole thing must be to get it concentrated, the gravity concentrated now, because superclusters are gigantic things. You know, it's completely completely different than a black hole. I mean, it's really, really different.
You know, the amusing thing is, you know, Einstein wrote this little paper, I think it was 1918, saying this is kind of a, you know, the general theme of the paper was, this is a really cool result, you know, if you've got a massive enough object, it will bend a lot. And he actually said, I doubt this will ever be used.
Yeah, it's just, insane. You can just look at this,
thinking about the questions of the answering the question of dark matter.
Yeah.
The only thing you showed is sort of mapping the clouds of dark matter, which we already sort of have an idea of how they're distributed around galaxies now. But otherwise, there are no new ideas.
That's because there's not enough data, I think, to constrain, you know, the theory on what it might be.
It seems to me like the major mystery is what the hell it is.
Yeah, I want to see the proof that it exists.
That's why we're building. Well, there's proof that it exists.
It exists.
I mean, you can, you know, Vera Rubin was the first astronomer to figure out that if you measure the rotation speed by looking at different pieces of the galaxy.
That's it's incidental. It's indirect.
And those gravitational lenses also tell you that there's missing matter or dark matter, because if you just go on the light you see in the galaxies, the things never quite where they should be, which then allows you to modify the model so you can figure out using those gravitational lenses what the missing mass is.
I hate dark energy, I hate dark matter. I think it's like steady state, so it's magic, you know, it's like let's just make up something.
Look at that 3,000 systems, there's a lot of really weird stuff there. There are planets that orbit binary stars, so it's kind of hard to draw a conclusion about ours based on data we have right now.
How many big systems do we really know of? I mean, like, as in 6, 7, 8 planets.
About 3,500.
But, I mean, those usually those are 2 or 3, right? Not like a whole roster.
I don't know how many systems there are that have 7 or 8 planets, but there are 3,500 systems with more than one planet confirmed.
You have tremendous difficulty seeing even something Jupiter distance, don't you? I mean, don't these things all tend to be really close?
Not all of them, no. I mean, we're able to see them because they cause that dip. So then you can go and do a follow-up. We never just say, yes, we saw a transit, there must be a planet. What we then do is go and do a follow-up observation using a spectrograph on the ground. We measure the wobble of the star. So once we've got those two measurements, we can actually figure out the radius, the mass of the planet, and then we've got the density. And if you see more than one transit, you've got more than one planet. So, you know, we do know these systems are there and that they exist.
Oh, I got a video of the transit of Venus in 2012, and then I accidentally erased it. It was actually through a 30-powered video camera, and I was actually able to get it. It almost burned my eye out. And even though it was just video ConTube, I don't really understand how it was so brilliant. All I have to do is wait another 284 years. When I was in NASA, I left with a pile of mission manuals like this, and spent really weeks and months going through it all. And it's just, the volume of stuff is so incredible. And of course, you can take 80 or 100 of them and put them all together, and that's one man mission, because all these things, we're going to go to Mars, Well, we can do a lot for one man. I love to see this. I can't believe man hasn't even gone to the moon, since 70 years. We thought it would be that long. But by now we should have a mass driver, and launcher. Okay, Chuck. Thanks, sir. Appreciate it. Really interesting talk. Okay.